That's enough of those. This is a poem that I'll read right after the prose poems, because I thought it was a poem in verse, and Michael Cudahy thought it was a prose poem, and I'll let you decide which it is. It's called Not Going to New York, a Letter. And I think it's like these in that I let myself ramble. I don't believe, well, it wanders. Not Going to New York, a Letter. Dear Dan, this is a letter of apology, unrhymed. Rhyme belongs to the dazzling couplets of arrival. Survival is the art around here. It rhymes by accident with the rhythm of days which arrive like crows in a field of stubble corn in upstate New York in February. In upstate New York in February, thaws hardened the heart against the wish for spring. There was not one thing in the barren meadows not muddy and raw-fleshed. At night, I dreamed of small black snakes with orange markings disappearing down their holes, of being lost in the hemlocks and coming on a clearing of wild strawberry, sunlight, abandoned apple trees. At night, it was mild noon in a clearing. Nothing arrived. This was a place left to flower in the plain cruelty of light. Mornings, the sky was opal, the windows faced east, and a furred snow reassumed the pines, but arrived only mottled in the field so that its flesh was my grandmother's in the kitchen of the house on Jackson Street, and she was crying. I was a good boy. She held me so tight when she said that, smelling like sleep rotting, if sleep rots, that I always knew how death would come to get me, and the soft folds of her quivery white neck were what I saw, so that sometimes on an airplane I looked down to snow covering the arroyos on the east side of the Sierra and its grandmother's flesh, and I look away. In the house on Jackson Street, I am the figure against the wall in Bonar's painting, The Breakfast Room. The light is terrible. It is wishes that are fat dogs already sated, snuffling at the heart in dreams. The table linen is so crisp it puts an end to fantasies of rectitude, clean hands, high art, and the blue beside the white in the striping is the color of the River Loire when you read about it in old books and dreamed of provincial breakfast, the sun the color of bread crust and the fruit icy cold, and there was no terrified figure, dwarf-like and correct, disappearing off the edge of Bonar's The Breakfast Room. It was not grandmother in The Breakfast Room, nor the It was not grandmother weeping in the breakfast room or the first thaw dream of beautiful small snakes slithering down holes. In this life that is not dreams but my life, the clouds above the bay are massing toward December and gulls hover in the storm-pearled air and the last of last season's cedar spits and kindles in the fire. Summer dries us out with golden light here, so winter is a kind of spring. Wet trees, a reptile odor in the earth, mild greening, and the seasonal mists lie across one another in the quick darkening of days. Kristen and Luke are bent to a puzzle, some allegory of the Quattrocento cut in 1,000 small uneven pieces which, on the floor, they recompose with rapt, leisurely attention. Kristen asks, searching for a piece round at one end, fluted at the other, do you know what a shepherd is? And Luke, looking for a square edge with a sprig of Italian olive in it, makes a guess. Somebody who hurts sheep? My grandmother was not so old. She was my mother's mother. I think the night before, my father must have told her we were going to move. She held me weeping, probably, because she thought she was about to lose her daughter. We only buried her this year in the genteel hotel on Leavenworth that looked across a mile of human misery to the bay. She smoked regally, complained about her teeth. Luke watched her wide-eyed with a mingled look of wonder and religious dread. She seemed so old. And once, when he reached up involuntarily to touch her withered cheek, she looked at him a while and patted his cheek back and looked at me askance and winked and said, old age ain't for sissies. This has nothing to do with the odd terror in my memory. It only explains it. The way this winter weather makes life seem more commonplace and, at a certain angle, more intense. It is not poetry where decay and a created radiance lie hidden inside words the way that memory folds them into living. O Westmoreland, thou art a summer bird that ever in the haunch of winter sings the lifting up of day. Pasternak translated those lines from Shakespeare. I imagine Russian summer, the smell of jasmine drifting toward the porch. I would like to get on a plane, but I would also like to sit on the porch and watch one shrink to the hovering of gulls and glint in the distance, circle east toward snow, and disappear. He would have noticed the articles, as a native speaker wouldn't. A bird in the haunch, and understood a little what persists when, eyes half closed, lattice shadow on his face, he murmured the phrase in the dark vowels of his mother tongue.